And in addition to all this, it's Fright Night Open Lines. So hit us with your scary story. You know, we have a trade publication. It's an internet service. They send out information. It's called Radio and Records in the broadcast industry. And in March, they have already publicized this, so I will tell you, they are going to be giving Art Bell the Lifetime Achievement Award, which is one heck of an honor. It really is. And I got to tell you, I am honored because they've asked me to introduce Art when he gets that Lifetime Achievement Award. And I'm really looking forward to doing that. But I'll tell you a little bit more about that. And Art may, he may not even want to bring it up, but I will if he doesn't, because it is a honor bestowed on just a few. And he's getting it this year. From Radio and Records. So congratulations to Mr. Bell on that. Back in a moment with Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Couple more hours to go. Wild Card Line, you're up with us. Hello there. Good morning.
Good morning, George.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, this is Linda from Windsor, Ontario, Canada.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, I just wanted to tell you about this one time I was like 12 years old with my girlfriend, and we were roller skating around this park a couple blocks from my house, and all of a sudden, everything seemed to stop. It really slowed down. The wind, the cars, and everything. And out of the corner of our eye, we saw this man.
Hello. Hello. She's gone. Saw a man. She's gone. East of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
This is Nick from West Palm.
Yeah, Nick.
My call is about. I believe that Prince Charles of Wales might be the Antichrist.
Oh, why would you say that, Nick?
Well, because there's tons of web pages on the internet that show his crest and point out the things that have symbolism, like from Revelations and stuff, that would point to him being the Antichrist. Now, I'm not for sure. It's a theory.
Boy, that's a push, Nick. I don't know.
Want me to explain some of it?
Yeah.
Well, on the left-hand side, there's this creature, it's like a cat or something, and it has the feet of a bear, which it talks about in the Bible, the body of a leopard, and the mouth of a lion. And
is that his personal crest?
Yes, definitely. That's
okay, so they make that up just for him?
Just for him.
His brother doesn't have it? His father doesn't have it?
Nope, just each member of the royal family has their own crest.
Get their own
crest,
all right.
And, but I'm... Personally, I believe that maybe the Pope, or not this Pope, but the next Pope, or one of the Popes, is going to be the false prophet also. Who perfect would be for it to be the false prophet than the Pope? No one suspects it. You know?
Oh, yeah, I think the Antichrist is going to be some evil person, Nick, don't you?
Yeah, but they have to be able to, the public has to trust him.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no question about that, but I don't think Prince Charles is it. I would believe more than Maitreya would be. Let's move on to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Good morning.
Don from Buffalo.
Hello.
First time caller.
Thanks.
George, I know it's Fright Night, and I've had many paranormal experiences, including, I could tell you, some family exorcism experiences that rival Nellicky Martin. But I actually think you'd be more interested in a fantastic after-death communication that a friend of mine experienced. So let me share that for
sure.
You.
Sure.
When I was a Methodist pastor in New York State, I had a parishioner named Lenny, and I visited his brother when he was sick, and his wife Helen, when she was sick, and all of his family. And he wore his emotions on his sleeve, you know, like you might expect somebody to do it. But I was always curious about one thing. His son Jeff, his son's wife, and their two children had been killed in a small plane crash, and it didn't seem like Lenny grieved for the loss of his son and his family to me. And, you know, I let it go. I thought maybe it's like Bambi in the headlights, you know.
Yeah.
But one time I thought, well, I think I want to check into this. This is a little odd. So I went over to his place, and his wife, Helen, he wasn't there. He was on an errand. But his wife, Helen, remarked to me, oh, that's because Jeff visited him and cleared up the grief problem. So I go, oh, I guess that's kind of like your typical after-death communication vision. Well, I'll ask him about it when I could find a discreet moment. Well, anyway, when I finally got Leonard and I asked him about it, this is what he told me. And I've never, as I said, I've had many paranormal experiences, mm-hmm. but nothing even remotely close to this. He said it was after the funeral of his son and his son's family. And he said he was getting in his son's old pickup truck to do some errands in town. Leonard lived up out in the country, as I did. And as he was coming to the base of his driveway, he saw a figure emerge from the ditch by the highway. And he said it was his son, Jeff. And he said he was in shock. He thought he was dreaming. And Jeff came over to the side of the pickup and said, Dad, do you mind if I drive the truck for old time's sake? And Leonard, he said, he was still in shock. He moved over. Jeff got in the truck.
He moved over. He moved over?
Yeah. Well, Leonard did, yes.
Yeah.
And they drove north towards Rochester. And during the conversation, you know, they expected, Leonard didn't go into all the details. I wish I had asked him more questions, but I was kind of shocked myself to hear this. But, you know, he said, we're all together, the wife, Karen, and the two kids, and we're all okay. And then he shared information about his financial investments, you know, to help him tie up loose ends. And then he turned right on a side road. He was, till now, they were driving down a busy highway. And they turned right down a side highway. And after they drove about 2 miles and they were expressing their love to each other, the son finally said, Dad, I'm sorry. I'm not permitted to go any further. Now, this is interesting to me because I found hints in researching this kind of thing that permission is required. You know, you wonder why these things don't happen more often. Now, who grants the permission under what circumstances? Who knows? And out of the movie, The Field of Dreams, Leonard watched his son walk towards a small woods and vanish. Well, Leonard told me, Don, he said, you know, I was too much in shock to be inspired by this. He said, I went home and I was still grieving. I still bawled like a baby. And he said, it was so bad that the next day, he said, I went for a walk in the woods behind my house. And he said, I walked, and at a certain point, I was so overcome with grief that I had to sit down on a log and just cry. And he said, while I was doing that, I heard a commotion, something coming towards me. And he said, it was a woman. And he said, it was his son, Jeff's wife, Karen. And she approached him, and she said, what are you doing here? Didn't we tell you that we're okay? You get back in the house with Mom and comfort her. And Leonard said, for whatever reason, he said, that seemed to do it. And that's what cured my grief. And at this point, when Leonard is telling me this, I had a pained, I must have had a skeptical expression on my face. Now, one of the lessons I learned from this, George, is, as I said, I've had very many paranormal experiences, and as I say, some of them rival Malachi Martin. But I think unconsciously, some experiences we kind of censor. You know, we have an unconscious sense of what's possible and what's not. And this kind of taxed my stereotype as what is possible, even though it's
miraculous. This pushes it to the limit.
That's right. And so Leonard was in pain, and I felt just terrible because I had kind of badgered him to tell a story, you know. I mean, he had kept it private even from his own family because he thought people would consider him crazy. And I had heard stories somewhat like this that I'd read, you know, like in angel books, and I don't think I really believed them because they're so romantic.
Well, why do you believe Leonard now?
Well, because I knew him so well. I had had dinner at his home many times. You know, I knew him as a man of character. He was a member of the church that I pastored. He, in terms of if you're assessing somebody's credibility.
Well, what if his grief, Don, was so huge that his mind created all this?
Well, yeah, it's possible, and I guess that's what I was wondering. But the thing is, there was such a contrast between the way he was grieving and worrying about so many other family members. Remember, it was this awesome contrast that puzzled me.
Right.
And, you know, I'd had other experiences like that, and, you know, family exorcisms experience, but that to me is the most impressive after-death communication I've ever experienced. And I can honestly say, emotionally, it doesn't inspire me that much as, let's say, lesser experiences, for the simple reason that it's so bizarre.
Well, the most important thing, too, that I got out of this was that whether it happened or not, it made him better.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, of course, you know, I've had things almost as spectacular happen to me, but nothing like that. You know, and it sort of is reminiscent of the stories, you know, the Bible tells about the resurrection of Jesus. I mean, just the sheer physicality of it. And even though, as I said, one of the keys to me is that his son Jeff talked about not being permitted to go any further.
Yeah.
I think part of the mystery of why, I mean, because all of us recognize that if we could, if we died, naturally we'd give spectacular reassurance to our loved ones. So why doesn't it happen more often? I think one of the reasons, and, you know, there are many, you could go into detail on that, but one of the reasons is that the most spectacular experiences seem to require some kind of special permission for reasons that we don't understand.
Well, yeah, that's true. And I think there is something out there in the universe that works on people's grief to make them feel better after they have lost a loved one. There's no doubt in my mind whether they come back or there's something in our psyche that does that, because it seems to work. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, George. What do you want to talk about? This is Ruth.
You called me.
Hey, but there's so many things that I would like to talk about, and I try to call lots of times and can't get through, so I thought I'd let you pick.
Wow. A scary story. A fright night story.
A scary story.
Yeah, do you have one of those?
Mm.
This is weird.
Well, not really.
Why don't you
really
why don't you interview me?
I tell you what. The weirdest, well, okay, the
you
the
don't
scariest
wanna, you
thing.
You don't want to interview me.
Not, well, I wouldn't know what to say. That's your job.
Well,
I wouldn't want to try and do your job.
Why not?
Well, because I'm just, you know. I tell you what, though, there's so many different things that have happened to me or around me in my life that, I mean, I listen to you as much as I can. I work nights, so I just catch little bits and pieces. But there's so many times that I want to call in and I can't get through. And it just, so many different things.
Well,
so,
what's the
one where it scared my pants off, I was asleep one night. I was probably about, I'm going to say, 11 or 12. And we lived in a great big farmhouse.
Uh-huh.
And had the house I grew up in all my life. And one night, I woke up, I heard something. And across the room from my bed, there, I had a shelf, and it was like, I'm going to say about 4 feet tall, and it was like a bookshelf, you know, and I had all sorts of little, you know, gadgets and gizmos on the top of it arranged, you know, the way I wanted it, and, you know, little knickknacks and things like that, that kids collect, and I could tell that something was messing with my stuff, and I kind of raised my head up a little bit. And I looked over, and there was a figure standing there. And it was dark, but there was light coming from the window, so I could see. And it was just a silhouette, you know, like a, you know, just the outline.
Yeah, but you knew there was something there.
And it was a man. He had really broad shoulders, and he had on a hat that was, the brim of it was flat. And it stuck way out on both sides.
Was it like somebody from the 1800s?
I don't know. It was just, you know, and I've heard you guys talk about the hat man. And I wondered if that, you know, might have been something, but I don't know. And then, you know, I mean, and he stood over there and rumbled through my things for probably 10 minutes. And I just shrank down in the bed, as you can imagine, and pulled the covers up and tried not to move and tried not to breathe loud or anything.
What a horrible thing for a little kid to see.
Yeah, and I could see him moving. You know, I could see his arm moving, and I could hear my stuff moving. And then finally, after, you know, what seemed like an eternity to me, then I heard the door to my room kind of creak a little bit, and I peeked back out and looked again, and he was gone.
Why didn't you run out of there?
I had two doors. There was one at the top of the stairs that went toward through into the hallway to my mom's room on the other side of the hall, and then the stairway that went downstairs. Well, the downstairs had always spooked me anyway, so I didn't want to go down there, and I wasn't about to go the way he had went. So I laid there in the bed for no telling how long before I finally just fell asleep.
Yeah, I would have just hightailed it right out of there, Ruth. I mean, I would have been gone. First-time caller line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Hi.
This is Karen from Mississippi.
Yes, sir.
I've been a long-time listener of Coast to Coast. I started way back in the early 90s. One of my friends got me hooked on it, and I managed over the last couple of years to get my girlfriend hooked on the show, too.
It grows. So, it's a family thing now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, what I'm calling about is Ian Punnett. You talked to Ian Punnett not too long ago.
Right.
And he was talking about other kin. Well, I'm a vampire.
You're a vampire.
On the vampire show with my girlfriend. There's in our circle, the other kin circle, I guess you'd call it, people with animal souls are usually referred to as Therians, T-H-E-R-I-A-N. Other kin, the word itself, the name itself, usually refers to, I guess what you'd call myths as a whole, like vampires, I guess werewolves, Therians, Fays, all this. That's the term other kin usually lumps us all together in as a whole.
Now, there are some people who are vampires because they are playing at it. There are other people who truly think they are vampires. What are you?
Well, I am a real vampire. There are a lot in the vampire society that have a tendency to give real vampires a bad name because they play up the Hollywood fantasy of it, or there are a lot of them who do have a lot of problems. And, I mean, honestly, this is one thing that's been talked about in the vampiric circle for years is I really do wish there was a way, you know, other than just, you know, having to take somebody's word for it, that there was a way to honestly, absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt, prove that we are what we say we are.
I mean, what are some of the Hollywood fantasies that you don't do? I mean, do you bite people's necks?
See,
that's a yes or a no.
It depends on who you talk to.
I mean, do you bite their necks?
That's, like I said, that's one of those, it depends on which vampire you talk to.
Well, I'm talking to you, vampire man.
I don't bite the neck.
Okay, you don't, but some do.
Some do, but that's also one of those that some of them bite necks, but don't necessarily make a wound. Most real vampires, when they feed from somebody, they actually use a lancet to draw the blood out. And
is this a willing participant then?
Well, yes. Any vampire who feeds, and the people we feed from are affectionately called donors.
I'm going to hold you over, all right?
Okay.
I want to come right back. We're going to hit this break, and I'll be back and talk with what appears to be a real vampire. Well, we've got the Vampire Man on hold. We'll get to him right after the break. But I first want to say hello to all of you listening on your favorite radio stations across North America. Thank you for listening to Coast AM, Streamlink members, Coast Writers, XM Satellite, and then the various chat rooms all across the world, actually now. Of course, the NighthawkZone.com folks, headed up by Bad Boy. The Imaginative World folks, Captain Beyond, I like that name, Captain Beyond, Fantastic Forum Pirates, Into Infinity, Frog Forum with two G's, the National Radio Club. There's a new forum out called latenightforum.com. Hello to all of you. And it gets on and on. Sorcery IRC. Did I say the National Radio Club? All right, I'll say it again. National Radio Club. All of you, thanks for making Coast to Coast what it is. Okay, first of all, we'll go back to the vampire man who was on hold. Hello, thanks for holding, by the way.
Yeah, you're welcome. I had to plug my phone in anyway, so it was a great opportunity.
You don't mind me calling you the vampire man, do you?
No, I've been called worse, believe me.
All right, first of all, you got to tell me how this all started for you. Were you born this way?
Well, see, there's another thing that's up for debate in the vampiric community. A lot of us believe we were vampires. We were born as vampires because we were vampires in a previous life. But that goes into a lot of detail that I don't really think you have time for.
Well, but then now I'm confused, though, because I always thought that you were always living, basically.
Yeah, but that's another Hollywood thing. Vampires do not have what you consider long life. I mean, we live
like a human lives.
Yeah, we live about the same way as, you know, as your typical normal human being lives. You know, we can die of the same damn things.
So the old stake in the heart, that's another Hollywood myth.
The stake in the heart is going to kill anybody.
Yeah, that's true too.
You know? And the thing is, you know, there's no such thing as an undead vampire. About the only things I believe are undead are you know, ghouls and zombies, and I've yet to meet one of them.
All right, let me throw some things your way, and you tell me if this is myth or fact, okay?
Okay.
First of all, we were talking about vampires that suck blood from humans, and you said some do.
Yeah. See, the questions you're asking me, my girlfriend and I have actually put up our own website with a lot of FAQs, and the questions you're asking me are questions I don't mind answering to somebody who's actually interested. It's the ones who do it mockingly that...
Oh, no, we're not mocking you. I'm curious.
But where it comes to drinking blood, there are several different types of vampires out there, actually. You've got what a lot of us consider... Yeah, a blood vampire, sanguinarian, you know, vampires that feed strictly from actual physical blood, and they're usually drawn from a small wound on their donor, and it's always, pardon me.
Vampire, are you a vampire with a cold?
I have asthma.
Wait a minute. You're a vampire who has asthma?
There's another thing. Vampires are just as susceptible to diseases as anyone else, especially if we've gone a while without feeding. The normal, I guess, feeding schedule, and when I say feeding, you know, drinking blood or psychic energy, however you want to do it, is once or twice every couple of weeks. That seems to be normal in the vampiric community.
Now, if you don't get a willing participant to cough up the blood, I shouldn't say it like that. what do? Do you go stalk someone out?
No. This is another thing that's up for debate in the vampiric community, but a vampire feeding from somebody, whether it's psychically or physically, from somebody who is not given their permission, it's kind of likened to rape.
Well, I would agree with that, but some vampires do that? I mean, do they jump people from behind and start biting their neck?
I don't know, say, jump people from behind, but there's a lot of psychic vamps. Every vampire goes through what's called an awakening. This is when...
An epiphany. Their senses...
Yes?
I said an epiphany.
Yes, an epiphany, an awakening. This is when our senses start to... We've always realized there's something different about us, but these are when our senses start to, I guess, get a bit stronger, and we start to actually realize what we honestly are.
Were your parents vampires?
No, my parents are not. They know I am.
At what age, then, did you become a vampire, or did you become aware you were one?
I hit my awakening about 19 years old.
You were 19. All right, what's the first thing you did? What was the first drop of blood you ate? I mean, you drank.
Well, the first thing I did when I found out that this is what I was, when my awakening hit me, when I guess certain memories hit me and certain feelings hit me. I honestly passed out. It was such an overwhelming shock, I fainted.
You fainted? I mean, how did you find out?
I was working at a convenience store. Graveyard shift, of course.
Of course.
And a gentleman walked in, and the only way I can say this is I guess he recognized me from a past life.
So he was one, too.
Yes, he called me Taryn. Taryn is the name I go by in circles. It's not my real name. I would prefer not to give my real name.
Well, I understand.
But Taryn is the name I am known by in vampiric circles.
You got to take care of that asthma.
He called me Taryn. He said, oh, hello, Taryn.
Out of the blue. You never met him before.
Out of the blue. And I just blinked. And I had a couple, I guess you would say, a flood of a few memories.
So where'd you get your first drop of blood?
My first drop of blood, believe it or not, was from a female friend who I had met while I was working at the convenience store. And she had already known what I was because she was what you were. Right.
But what'd you do? Go up to her and say, hey, can I, bite your neck?
Asked me. We were talking, and she came in one night. This was a couple of nights after that happened. And we got to talking, and she looked at me, and she goes, you know what you are now, don't you? And I said, yes. I guess I've always known, but I actually now believe. And she said, do you need to feed? I mean, that was exactly what she asked me. Do you need to feed? And I said, yeah, I do. I really do believe I need to. Now, here's where a lot of things get, I won't say convoluted, but different. This is where the different type of vamps come in. You've got, the sanguinarius vamp, which, like I said, we feed from actual physical blood. You've got energy vamps. They feed directly from some outside energy source.
Sure.
And within that category are, I'm pretty sure you've heard the term psychic vamp.
Absolutely. We've done many shows on that.
Yeah, they draw energy. They need directly from another person or a bunch of people's oral, pranic, whatever you want to call it, their energy. You've got an emotional vamp, people that draw energy from other people's emotions, also called empathic vampires. And in this, most vampires and other kins are empathic to begin with. We can pretty much feel.
And then you just evolve a little bit.
Well, yeah. Then you've got sexual vamp. There's no need to explain that. Then you've got your elemental vamp, and these vampires tend to draw most or pretty much exclusively from the elements or nature. Storms, lightning storms, heavy storms seem to be a big favorite source.
Interesting. Okay, the energy.
But anyway, me and my girlfriend, and there are several others like us in the vampire community, and there's a lot of toss-up over the name, but we prefer to call ourselves hybrids. I guess you'd call us a cross between sanguinarius, blood-feeding vamps, and psi vamps, energy vamps, because even though her and I have yet to actually puncture the skin, we don't feed directly from somebody's psychic energy source.
So, in this first case in the convenience store with the girl, did you chomp on her neck or what?
Well, the first time, yeah, I actually did. I placed my lips on her neck and bit down. I didn't bite hard enough to, break the skin or not even leave a hickey or a bruise. But I bit down enough to where I could feel, I guess, the flesh against my teeth.
And when you drink the blood, I mean, how much are you drinking? Just a little bit?
Well, actually, yeah, you drink, and the best way to describe it is enough. And being a vampire, when it's enough. You just know.
And she doesn't pass out or anything like that?
I have yet to ever have anybody pass out. Now, usually after feeding, and it doesn't matter what type of feeding it is, the person, the donor, usually feels slightly euphoric, maybe a bit serene. They might have a little loss of energy, but it doesn't reach danger levels.
All right.
If you drink enough from somebody to get them to reach a danger level, you've drank way too much. You fed a lot.
Tell me a little bit about the person who allows you to do this. I mean, why do they do this?
Well, one, I'm pretty sure, you've seen a lot of vampire movies. Vampires are very romanticized.
I mean, what do you look like? What do you wear? What kind of clothes do you have?
Well, what do you wear?
Normal stuff.
There you go.
So you're not walking around in a black cape or anything like that?
Vampires and gothics seem to be lumped together.
Yeah.
Now, granted, there are a lot of goths who are vampires and a lot of vampires who are goths. But the goth in and of itself has nothing to do with what a lot of modern-day goths say it is.
Do you have vampire teeth?
No. Actually, I wear dentures.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of vampires do have slightly prominent canines, but I don't think I've ever known any vampire to actually bite somebody and pierce his skin and draw the blood out that way.
You've heard of some people who are vampire wannabes, and they go to the dentist, and they have those teeth put on permanently.
Oh, there are a lot of them in the community. Some of them are vampires, but they like to play up the fantasy, if that makes sense.
Sure. All right, Don, do you all get together and meet regularly?
Sometimes. Some of us do. My girlfriend and I are like, we live out in the middle of nowhere. We live out in the boonies, so it's kind of hard to actually get together in a lot of these places.
What state are you guys in?
Mississippi is where we live.
Mississippi,
right now.
That's right. You said that earlier. Okay.
Yes. But a lot of the donors, I guess they're attracted. And the only way I can say is they're attracted to the vampiric image. And most donors, though, honestly, know the difference between Hollywood and real life.
And you know, so what do you do for a living now, if I can ask?
Right now, I am currently looking for work. And in my spare time while I'm job hunting, I'm currently working on several novels.
Well, and I guess you don't put on your resume, I'm a vampire.
No. I mean, there are people I've worked with that knew what I was because they were too. Well, my girlfriend and I were interviewed for the A&E special, The Secret Life of Vampires.
Really?
Yeah, my girlfriend and I were on it. But there's not a lot of people that honestly watched it.
Are you religious?
I believe in God. I believe in Christ. But I'm not religious per se. I don't believe in organized religion. I'm what you consider, I guess, paganistic. I believe...
Take care of that asthma, Mr. Vampire Man.
I believe in God. I believe in Christ. I also believe in other gods, in other deities. I do practice magic from time to time. I also believe the credo, you know, do no harm. You know, paganistic is not, you know, symbolic with Satanism. But you're going to find a lot of vampires who are religious. I grew up in Utah. I grew up in a Mormon state. I moved out here in Mississippi to be with my girlfriend.
Do you wish that you were not a vampire if you had your pick?
No. Actually, I wouldn't. I wouldn't trade it for anything because a lot of the heightened senses I have because I'm a vampire have, the only way I can explain it is kept me out of trouble. Does that make any sense?
Sure. Now, one last question. You don't have the ability to shapeshift, do you?
No. That is strictly Hollywood.
Okay. I'm going to let you go. We'll take some other calls. Fascinating. I'll tell you. Absolutely fascinating. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Tiffany over in Chicago.
Hi, Tiffany. How are you?
I'm good. Actually, I'm calling in to talk about the man in the hat. You know, the woman just called before the vampire guy. Talking about the man in the hat that was in our bedroom, and I had the same apparition in my house. It was right after my aunt died, and I was upstairs cleaning my room, and the bathroom kind of conjoins with it, and I was cleaning the bathroom, and I was in the bathroom, and there was the man in the black hat. He had the same kind of grin on his face, and my grandma told me maybe it was death. I don't know, but it's the same thing. It's the freakiest apparition I've ever seen. It freaked me out totally.
And it just kind of like hangs around for a little bit.
Just hang out, and I couldn't move. I couldn't scream. I just stared at him, and he just stood there. And it freaked, you know, I just didn't know what to do. And then it just, as soon as I blinked, and the door seemed to crack, and it was just creepy when I was listening to that woman. I'm like, that's exactly what happened to me in my house.
Somebody,
it was just the same thing.
Somebody sent me a message, you know, to tell all of you, if you want to get rid of these shadow people, to turn on the light switch. It doesn't work that way. I mean, you can even have these shadow people when the lights are on. They simply just don't go away. Let's go to our west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Well, hi, Mr. Norrie.
Yes, sir.
I'm Gary.
Hi.
I'm Gary in the rambunctious, bustling metropolis of Milford, Utah.
Well, welcome, sir.
And let me say that it's a real treat for me to be able to speak with you.
Thank you.
I have two things I'd like to do. One is a pretty frightening story, at least to me, and the other is a bit of advice to a fellow who called you earlier and was cursed by his former girlfriend.
Yes.
I was cursed once, and it didn't work. And the reason it didn't work is because I simply don't accept that sort of thing. I would suggest, if the fellow's still listening, I hope he is.
I'm sure he is.
Just reject it. It's things like that can't harm you if you won't let it.
Am I right that he has, like, made this, you know, take over his life?
Yes, it sounds like it. I've my family is psychic, and I've inherited it. I've been precognitive ever since I can remember. I've seen ghosts. My grandmother came to me at the moment of her death, and I think she gave me a lot of the power, or not power, but ability that I
sure.
have. And anyway, I just suggest that this fellow just reject it. And by the way, you gave him good advice when you told him to think positively.
Yeah, I think that's the first step. He's got to do that, and I don't think he's doing it right now.
And by the way, one of the things that I enjoy about your you so much is that you speak so calmly and so reasonably, and I've been listening to you for a long, long time, and I've never been tempted to call until tonight, because of that fellow with his curse.
Well, I learned, Gary, a long time ago that no matter what happens in this world, and I'm going to be with all of us, all of you, for a very long time, and we're going to go through some incredible events on this planet, on this program, and you don't need me to panic. No, you don't want that. So you're never going to get that from me. I'm pretty unflappable when it comes to that. If we can look into the future sometimes and remember this moment, we will have some of those nights where we're going to have to all band together, because we will truly feel some of the wrath of this planet and some of the things that are going to happen one day. Gosh, I dread those nights. But you'll never see me lose my cool. I can't.